see the shining sea throughout the solar system and extending to interstellar regions beyond. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be. All around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. We're here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. We had some very tragic, actually horrific events at the Boston Marathon today. I'm sure everybody's heard about it. The explosions, the bombs, numbers of people dead and numbers of people injured. And that's the big, big, big news, I guess, really all around the world today. In all of that news reporting, I heard something that was really, really disturbing to me. And before I say this, look, we have fans all over the world, including Jordan. And what I'm about to say is not directed to the good and decent people of Jordan. But there's a group of extremists in Jordan that released a statement that had high praise for the horrific events and the death and destruction that has taken place in Boston, had high praise for it and were glad it was happening. To them, not to the people of Jordan, but to them, and to all who are like them, who praise death and destruction, let me give you a very sincere invitation to kiss our American ass. My sincerest sympathy to the victims of this insanity. When we take a break in just a couple of minutes here, the music in that break is in honor of the victims of this tragedy. We publish here at the Kevin Smith Show a newsletter, and it's free, and I would like for you to be getting it. You would like to be getting it. If you ever get it, you'll be hooked. And in order to get it, all you have to do is scoot over to my website and click where it says K-Files, big word, right in the middle of your screen. You can't miss it. And subscribe. You're going to get an email automatically, and it has a link in it that you have to click in order to activate your subscription. That makes sure that we don't spam anybody, okay? Your email address, it goes in our list. We don't share that with anybody. We don't rent it out. We don't loan it. We don't lease it. We don't sell it. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed to the K-Files. We've been publishing that now since the year 2000, and not once have we ever rented out, loaned out, leased out our email list. Okay? So let me invite you to start getting one of the best publications out there. It's always got articles and about the things that are in our genre, and it's got links to videos about things in our genre, and I think you'll really, really like it. We would love to have you as part of our K-Files family, all right? We're going to step away for break, and we shall return right after this.
All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. Musicalley.com.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted you are here. Let me get our volume all fixed up right here. Welcome back. I'm delighted you are here. And, I'm almost speechless. I shouldn't be, but I am almost speechless when I think about some group that's happy that a bunch of innocent people were killed. And I know that some of that happens in our various military campaigns. And I can assure you I'm never happy about it. And there's a whole bunch of us here in America not happy about it. But I want to repeat again, for those of you who are happy that a bunch of innocent people were killed, including an 8-year-old little boy, kiss my ass. Kiss all our asses. All right. Now, on to the subject matter for this evening. My guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. He has been with us many times, and we're delighted that he is back with us again this evening. And we're going to be talking about something pretty exciting. Dr. Agnew, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be here, even on this day when, we've been attacked on what is supposed to be a day of celebration, a day of good, clean, competitive fun. My heart is with your comments exactly. I don't like violence anywhere in the world, even when we send drones into other countries and their children are killed along with the bad guys.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people around the world need to know that. They need to know that there are millions of us that don't support that. I mean, we don't want innocent people killed anywhere. And but I will say this, in addition to having said that, this world would be much, much better off if all of the people who love death and destruction partake of it. Just die and leave the rest of us alone, and then we might have some peace. All right, now having said that, on my website, there is a picture about tonight's show, as always, and there is a headline, and having read that headline, I realized it conveys something I really didn't intend it to convey. So it's a little bit misleading, but certainly not on purpose. It says, to Mars and back in 30 days. That makes it sound like the round trip is 30 days. It's to Mars in 30 days and back in 30 days. Okay? So you can get there in 30 and come back in 30. And that makes the trip really doable. NASA is the one... they are the ones who are ultimately behind all of this because they're putting up the money for the engine. And Dr. Agnew is here to talk with us about it. It's a new kind of engine. It's not chemical fuel. It's not liquid fuel. And it's not the standard nuclear reactor type of nuclear rocket engine. It's a different kind that we haven't seen. Dr. Agnew, tell us about this.
Well, as luck would have it, you got a hold of me at the right time. $1,000 into this test, then this engine should be able to lift about 150 tons, which also means that they don't have to carry a lot of fuel. They can carry payload. It accelerates at about 0.2 Gs, which is nice because you don't smash the living components inside the craft. You don't tear up all the gear inside by accelerating at 8 or 9 Gs. And you can accelerate for about 4 days and get this craft up to very high speeds, over 100,000 miles an hour. And usually to get those kinds of speeds, we have to slingshot around another planet. This way, we can go to Mars in 1 month instead of 8 months. It's a big difference.
Well, it's a big difference in travel time, and that's a good thing. But it's also a big difference in payload.
Absolutely, because normally we have to lift all that fuel. That's what that big red tank is on the bottom of the space shuttle when it launches. It's full of hydrogen peroxide. And, you know, we lose that every time we launch. So that's a terrible waste of money. This way, you know, once you get the craft up into orbit and you build this thing, you could build something five times the size of the space shuttle. I mean, the space station, and you could take it to Mars.
Now, I think you said it would be able to accelerate to somewhere around 100,000 miles per hour, right?
Correct. Or maybe a little faster than that. It just depends on the inertia of the ship itself. It'll lift 150 tons. So, you know, if you build a 300-ton craft, then it's not going to accelerate that fast. It'll just bounce against the inertia of the craft. But our craft are significantly lighter than that that we take in that kind of manner. So, and it's scalable. The way that they smash the deuterium is they put an aluminum band around it and a lithium band around it, and then they apply about a 200-kilowatt charge to the aluminum. And what happens is the aluminum and lithium will contract, and it will contract very quickly, like in just a few microseconds. So it creates a burst of criticality. Instead of an explosion that's uncontrollable, it's very controllable, like a volume control almost.
All right. Now, if you're traveling at 100,000 miles per hour and a space BB hits you, isn't that likely to be a fatal event?
No, not necessarily, because even if you were going around the planet at a leisurely 18,500 miles an hour like the space station does, a space BB is, you know, will puncture the outer layer of the craft, but it won't penetrate all the way into the craft. We have layers and layers of Kevlar that we make these craft with, and now we have inflatable craft that are even better because they don't present a hard surface to those BBs. It's more like trying to shoot a .30-06 into a gravel road instead of a 5-gallon bucket full of water. It just doesn't go anywhere.
All right, so with this new engine, and by the way, folks, I have a picture of the prototype of this engine for those who are watching. This engine uses these pellets. So when the pellets have outlived their usefulness, what do they do with them?
Well, the pellet will eventually be totally consumed because the deuterium is 100% efficient and tritium. The difference between deuterium and tritium, they're both hydrogen, but deuterium has one neutron associated with it, and tritium has two neutrons associated with it. So one's just a little bit denser than the other one. But once the fuel is used up, it's gone. And the nice thing about tritium is outside the human body, it has a half-life of about 7.5 years, effectively. Maybe a little bit longer than that. It can like a piezoelectric effect, only the aluminum is much more powerful, much stiffer than a piezo crystal would be, and it actually compresses the tritium and forces a very, very short blast, about just a few millionths of a second, just enough to shoot off however many tritium atoms will actually go critical in that moment.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Dr. Brooks Agnew, and we're talking about this new type of rocket engine that's in development. And this rocket engine does not use solid rocket fuel like we're used to, or the liquid rocket fuel. It uses a fusion reaction. And this is not something that's, you know, just a bunch of scientists that have fairy dust in their eyes. This thing is really underway. And so I had just asked, you know, how far are we from seeing this thing fly? You just begun to answer that, Dr. Agnew. We had to step away for break. So how far do you think that would how far are we from it?
The proof of concept is underway now. And what proof of concept means that you build it in some metal building, bolt it up to a bunch of metal framework, and then you test it with all kinds of transducers on it to measure the thrust and temperature and fatigue on the metal and different things. You don't want to put an expensive payload or a human payload on top of this and have it fail somewhere between here and Mars. That's a 90 million mile trip, round trip. So they will go through the proof of concept. I would say this year they'll probably have at least the small scale proven out. And this thing could be scaled very large. It could be scaled to lift, you know, millions of pounds to speeds much faster than 100,000 miles an hour. If we got it working and we were able to refine the nozzle technology, refine the frequency at which we fire it and some of the metals that we use to contain it, you know, I see getting up to, you know, 0.2, 0.3 light speed with it.
That's pretty impressive. Now, you talked about nozzle technology, and that's important because it has to be, the nozzles have to be able to withstand the heat and the thrust.
That's true. And these are very small particles, so it's not like you're etching them with abrasive particles like you would from a solid booster. These are very small, and most of the thrust is going to come from the gas, the plasma, that is actually generated from the fusion reaction. Remember, there's a lot of energy that's released in this. So you're not just shooting helium and neutrons out the back. You're also shooting a lot of energy and gas. So other components can be used to enrich the plasma, which could also be solid at the time. We use a lot of solid fuel retro rockets using catalytic rockets. They're basically a powder similar to what you use for heating your campfire. You know, hexane, solid hexane that you can use to heat a campfire. Similar to that, only, you know, much more compressed to enrich the plasma. And when you're shooting out a energetic plasma at that velocity, the nozzle has to have a specific shape in order to optimize that. Otherwise, you just aren't very efficient.
All right, so where are the brakes on this thing? You're traveling at 100,000 miles an hour, and Mars is coming up fast. So where are the brakes?
Well, you don't drag your feet, that's for sure.
Uh-huh.
The idea that was floated a long time ago, and we use it today when we try to fall out of orbit and drop back to the Earth, we simply turn the craft around backwards and fire the launch system again, and only this time it's firing in the opposite direction.
Uh-huh.
Now, you don't really notice it. Right now we're traveling at 18.5 miles per second through space as Earth going around the sun. But we don't really notice it because there's no drag from space, not even when you're in orbit at 23,500 miles out, like the satellite we're probably bouncing off of right now. So you'd simply flip the craft with Mars in the rearview mirror, and then you accelerate again at about 0.2 Gs for about 4 days until you slow all the way down to an orbit velocity and drop in around Mars.
Would this craft, I'm just guessing now, but you correct me if I'm wrong. It would seem to me that this would be like the main engine. This is the main drive that gets you there. But would this craft be able to use that same type of energy to do the fine tuning in its navigation, or will it have to have some liquid rocket fuel and rockets to do that?
No, it won't have to have any liquid on it. Most of the retro rockets that we use on the space shuttle right now are all solid fuel. What they do is they expel a little bit of the powder into a catalyst. The catalyst makes the powder combust, and that's what steers the space shuttle around, and also, you know, recorrects different kinds of adjustments they have to make to the space shuttle. But the nice thing about this type of motor is it's scalable. You could make a small one, 2 or 3 feet in diameter, and you could have a large one, you know, 20 or 30 feet in diameter. Now, here's one of the other best things about it, is you could carry a 5.5 year fuel supply with you.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's like, you know, the Starship Enterprise. You fill it up with dilithium crystals and off you go to the edge of the galaxy. You could do the same thing with this kind of motor. It really opens up at least the solar system and maybe even regions of the galaxy.
So 30 days to get to Mars, a little bit less to get to Venus, maybe a year to get to Pluto, something like that.
Or maybe a little less. Remember, this kind of motor, if it's finely tuned enough and the ship is built right, could get up to, you know, fractions of light speed.
We usually hear things like this. The technology they let us know about is obsolete by the time they let us know it.
Well, that's true. That's true. And like I said, we've had these ion drives around since the days of Eisenhower. Why we're not using them in space? ready for it yet.
Well, the thought occurred to me that we could be watching NASA do that. They put up the money for the development and then say, it just didn't meet our expectations.
Well, we could be, but here's the thing that always throws the wrench in it. We're not the only ones thinking about going to space. The Russians are talking about putting a robotic mining operation on the moon. The Chinese are talking about going to the moon. The Chinese have already put up their own space station. They're going to put other pieces up to it shortly. If we don't do this, some other advanced nation, could be India, could be Pakistan, could be North Korea, we don't know, they're going to do it. And chances are, they're not going to do it with peaceful intentions, because he who controls space controls the Earth.
Well, that would indicate we're not going to do it with peaceful intentions.
I'm afraid so. We are weaponizing space. We have always been weaponizing space.
All right, so we can get to Mars now. Now, we have a break coming up, so I'll set this up and we'll talk about it when we come back from the break. But we're going to be able to go to Mars in 30 days. We're going to be able to carry tons of supplies, and we will be able to colonize Mars. When we say we, who are we talking about? We'll get that answer on the other side of the break. Who among we are we talking about that will colonize Mars, and what kind of a colony will it be? Will it be civilian? Will it be military? Will it be a mixture of civilian and military? All right, we're going to step away for this break, and we shall return right after this.
It's a problem. Don't really.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're delighted to have you with us this evening. And my guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. As we went away for break, Dr. Agnew, I had asked, kind of set up the situation. I had asked the question, okay, we're going to be able to get to Mars in 30 days and carry tons and tons of supplies. Pretty obvious we're going to be able to colonize Mars. When I say we, who is we? Is it going to be a military outpost, or is it going to be civilian, or is it going to be a mixture? What's up?
It is probably going to be a WTO, World Trade Organization, group of nations, and I'll tell you why. Because this administration has just about gutted our NASA program. They've already come out and said there'll be no manned missions to the moon. We're not going back to the moon. You'll recall President Bush said that he had implemented plans to go back to the moon by 2020. Mm-hmm. Well, this administration has scrapped all those plans.
Yeah.
There's no plan whatsoever to develop space as a single nation. We're going to have to go at this with a multinational. This will be the French. It'll be the European Space Community. It will be probably the Indians helping us. It'll be a multinational event because it'll take a lot of money, it'll take a lot of expertise, and a lot of the technology that it takes to get a craft like this up there, and the living quarters and protection systems and organic systems that we're going to have to put on Mars to be able to sustain life. We can't keep sending food up there. We got to eventually be able to provide for ourselves or whatever colonies up there. It's going to have to be definitely a multinational effort, unless we figure out as a planet that it's time to stop fighting over this small piece of dirt in the middle of space and we learn to work together. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
Well, as far as growing food, we know, based on statements from a NASA program, that they can grow food in that dirt. The Phoenix lander scooped up some dirt and analyzed it. And Dr. Peter Smith, who was running all of that for NASA, declared that dirt's just like the dirt in your backyard. You could probably grow asparagus in it. So they can grow food. Water is an issue, but I don't think it's as much an issue as NASA tells us. I don't think Mars is dripping with water, but I think there is running, living, flowing liquid water on the surface.
Well, that's a good opinion. I don't know if we've ever witnessed it, but there is certainly erosion from rivers, sizable rivers, like bigger than Mississippi rivers on Mars. Where did that water go? Well, some believe that whatever atmosphere was on Mars and whatever water was associated with it as an atmospheric river was stripped away from Mars during some geomagnetic event. You know that Mars does not have a magnetosphere, so it can't protect itself like we can against geomagnetic storms. But many people, including myself, believe that there's lots of subterranean water. Now, the technology that was sent up there with MARSIS, which is an orbiting system that goes around Mars, it coordinates with ground explorers, not Spirit and Opportunity. They're small, but this latest one that went up there does have the technology. It can coordinate with MARSIS, and it can do what we call ground probing radar. Now, a paper that I sent to NASA in 1996, before this launch engine ever went up, explained how ground probing radar can reflect back subterranean water down to a depth of about 3,000 feet with very little wattage. So I expect to see some reports before the end of this year that there is liquid water underneath the surface of Mars.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that I say I think there is liquid water on the surface is because the ESA has photographed it. You can see in some of their photographs what looks like lakes And it the reason it looks like lakes is because you can see the reflection of the cliffs in the water. You can see waves on the surface of the water, and you can even see in some of them white caps. And so we also have NASA's own picture of their own lander sitting on Mars near the North Pole, where they said there's never any liquid water because of sublimation. It goes straight from ice to vapor. And in that picture, the leg of their lander comes down across the picture, and there's actually a series of pictures where we're watching water condensation on that leg, forming droplets and running. So we know there's enough in the atmosphere, and sublimation is a NASA myth.
Wow. Now that's really something, because if water can exist in liquid form, that means that the atmospheric pressure is much higher than what they are reporting. They're saying that the atmospheric pressure of Mars is less than what you would experience on the top of Mount Everest.
Yeah. They're claiming it's 0.7% of Earth. And in other words, less than 1%. It cannot be. And you've heard me say this before. If that were true, why did they design, develop, and test fly an airplane that they intended to fly on Mars? It was a funded program, and the only reason they didn't do it is the funding got shifted to another program. Why did they do that? How are you going to fly an airplane without air?
Well, you can. You can fly an airplane with that. We fly airplanes in the stratosphere.
Well, we have jet engines on them. This didn't.
Well, we have flown a solar-powered aircraft, a prop-driven aircraft, at 100,000 feet on this planet. So it can fly, but it has to be very, very light, and it has to have a lot of surface area or be able to fly at very fast speeds. But a plane will fly in the Martian atmosphere.
Well, none of what you described is part of that plane. It did not have a large surface area and didn't have jet engines and incapable of flight, in my opinion, in the Martian atmosphere. It may be capable of a controlled crash, but it didn't have a big wingspan. And look, you take whatever it takes in order for an aircraft to fly here on this planet. It takes and you take it to Mars, its weight will be reduced to about 40% of what it is here on Earth.
Right.
Your requirements for flight then reduce to 40% of what it would take for that craft to fly here on Earth. They say we have less than 1%. The story doesn't wash.
You're right, it doesn't wash, and a lot of observers are seeing that. And the interesting thing that I see coming up is there are some very well-funded imaginary people out there who are interested in making non-governmental flights, not just to Mars, but also to the moon. Like I said, Russia's looking at a commercial mining operation. And if they ever land a mining rover on the moon, you know, it's Katie bar the door. That place is full of helium-3. It's full of water. It's full of titanium. It's a treasure trove of minerals.
Yeah.
If we ever get a manufacturing operation going there, you know, you're only 1 day, 2 days away from the moon. That's something that's very, very viable.
All right, so why would we go do a colony? Mining? On Mars, I mean.
Well, not for stuff that you'd bring back to Earth, but if you could get a mining operation and a smelting operation and a processing operation up there, you could do the same thing that you've done in the frontiers of Earth. You can build structures.
Why?
Well, because maybe we're following the philosophy of Robert A. Heinlein, that Earth is far too small and fragile a basket in which to keep all the human eggs. It's maybe it's time to colonize our solar system.
All right. Well, we are about, I don't know, 30 seconds away from break. And when we come back, I would like to open up the telephone lines and invite the audience to join our conversation. Are you willing to take some calls?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, that is exactly what we'll do. We'll open up the telephone lines and invite you to join the conversation. You may have some questions, comments, or observations about all of this. Looks like if NASA doesn't kill it, Mars is on. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Dr. Brooks Agnew. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. my sincere sympathy to you for whatever kept you away from that first hour, and my best wishes, hopes, prayers, and dreams that you never suffer that trauma again. We are talking about something really exciting that NASA is funding, and that is the development of a brand new type of rocket engine using fusion, and would make it possible to get to Mars in 30 days and then back in 30 days. The title of the show says to Mars and back in 30 days. I didn't realize until after I put that up there that it made it sound like you could do the round trip in 30 days. But it's 30 days out and 30 days back, and apparently pretty cost efficient. We want to invite the audience to join our conversation. And the way you join our conversation is pretty simple. Just give us a call. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. 623-444-5889. For those of you outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you may use an additional method because of the costs involved in making international long-distance calls. It's called a flash message. Just go to my website, scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show, and you'll see the link right above that picture. It says flash message. If you're in the USA, it won't work. You can send me flash messages till the cows come home, as they say. I won't get them. I won't see them. I'll see a notice that we got one. From the USA or from Canada, but then it dumps the message. I don't get to see it. All right, that's why we have a telephone for you. 623-444-5889. Dr. Brooks Agnew, are you ready to take some calls?
Absolutely. Bring them on.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Brooks, I'm going to ask you this. I'm all in favor of the engine if it works for space travel. However, I'm curious. Could we outfit it to run? You said it's scalable. Could we outfit it to fly an airplane? If that's a possibility, could we specially design, say, a 747 or a 777 to fly to the moon?
Yes, you could. Yes, you could. If you could keep the pressure, because, you know, a 747 gets up to about, 40,000 feet. And it maintains an internal pressure of about 6,000 feet altitude. That's why your ears kind of pop when you go up in the airplane. Now, that's just a thin aluminum skin, and it's not able to contain 14.7 pounds per square inch on the inside of that plane. So it would have to be specially outfitted. The issue is that you don't want radioactive exhaust in our atmosphere. As I said, the tritium that comes, the helium and energetic neutrons that come out the back will be radioactive, although they are beta emitters. You don't want to lay trails of this in our atmosphere because it will be radioactive for quite a few days. So it's not something that we would like to do, but it's in space. It's irrelevant.
Theoretically, it's possible, though.
It is possible.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
All right, thanks.
And he brings up a good question, Kevin, because if you're going to make a weapon like a missile, where normally you would have to have three stages to power this thing up into the high atmosphere and launch it, say, intercontinentally to another place, you wouldn't have to have that with the fusion engine. You could build a small scalable engine, you could have a heavy payload, and you could launch it. And since you're launching a weapon, who cares if the exhaust is slightly radioactive?
Well, you know, you'd have to care about the people around the launch area.
I'm sure the North Koreans care about their people around the launch area.
Well, we're not them. And I think we would have to care.
Yeah, but as I said earlier in the program, if we don't do it, and this is the mentality of the militarized space program, if we don't do it, our enemies will.
We need a few fewer enemies, you know.
Well, one way to do that is to quit pointing weapons at each other and threatening to annihilate each other. Yeah. We need to realize that we're on this ball of rock together. And, you know, all the crazy guys, what happens is the people just need to say, you know what, we're not doing this anymore. I don't care if it's Kim or Ahmad or whoever it is. Just say, you know what, we're not doing this anymore. Go rant and rave all you want. We're not following your orders.
You know, I say it all the time, the most powerful weapon on earth that every, I call them politiocs. They're not even politicos, they're politiocs. I tried to make something that would sound similar to maniac, but I couldn't come up with something about politiac, and that didn't sound right. So politiocs. The weapon politiocs fear more than all nuclear weapons stacked together is the word no.
Yeah, or apathy.
Yeah. Well, they can get away with apathy. You know, if you have apathy, they can just do what they want to do. But when you stand up and say, no, we're not doing this anymore. Like you said, you guys, you know, you got a problem, you guys go get in the boxing ring.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. They're afraid of the word no. And when the people learn the power of the word no, they'll own their lives again. But
that if the North Koreans walked toward, as a people, walked toward the demilitarized zone and walked over that zone to South Korea, that would be the end of that.
Yeah.
It would have a unified peninsula.
Yeah. However, in today's climate, they would probably be mowed down because of all the mouthing off their midget dictator has been saying. Anyway, back to Mars. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. We can get there in 30 days, apparently, and get back in 30 days. What's the cost per pound on this?
Well, tritium is pretty cheap. And I question this budget, this $600,000 proof of funds, the picture you have on your website. If you look at that contraption that's built inside that insulated metal building, that's a lot more than 600 grand. NASA scale, that's about $600 million in that building.
All right, so it's already built. What's the $600,000? Was that to fund the testing?
Yeah, maybe to fund the political lunch that they're going to have when they demonstrate it. I'm not sure. But the $600,000 proof of concept is probably little more than a benchtop version of this. But the one I'm looking at in the picture here looks to be about 6 to 8 feet in diameter with a lot of cells on it. There's a lot of machine work that's done on this that has to be in a very large five-axis CNC. This is expensive stuff that they've built.
What is a five-axis CNC?
It's literally stands for computer numerical control. It's a way for computers to run a robotic head with some kind of tool on it, like an end mill or a drill or a surface grinder or some kind of rotating blade. And then also the piece of work itself is usually rotated inside that. It's a complex way of machining, but it's very common. It's done on small scale in just about every city in the country. This is pretty large scale work for this aluminum.
Okay. Now, let's talk about going to Mars and what is it that, I mean, I want to go. I mean, if they called me tomorrow and they said, you know what, we kept back one of the shuttles. It's in pretty bad shape. You got about a 50% chance of this thing working. And we've never sent one to Mars. We don't think we can pack enough sandwiches to last you for very long. But we've got a seat on there. If you want to go, I'd take it.
I think I would too, provided it was a round trip.
Well, who knows? I mean, they're not even a 50% chance you're going to get there. I mean, maybe a 25% chance you come back.
A bunch of college students with JPL launched the first rover up there, and they just bounced it in a big airbag on the surface, and it landed. And it ran for years past when it was supposed to. So that was a pretty low-budget launch.
Mm-hmm. All right, so, I mean, I'd love to go. Part of the reason I'd love to go is to stand there and breathe and prove my point. I just want to, I know that it's absolutely the truth. And listen, Dr. Harold Klein, you know who that was? Dr. Harold Klein was ultimately the founder of astrobiology at JPL and headed their astrobiological teams there. But on the Viking lander, he was the chief biologist. And I have a recording of him saying, what we found there was something like 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than we can account for from all known sources. And that's a direct quote. Okay. Now, that being the case, that means that your atmospheric density is much greater than they could account for. There's more oxygen there, but that also means it's a denser atmosphere. And I bet you it's about like standing on the top of the Andes. I bet you could, while you might have a little bit of huffing and puffing, I bet you could live in that atmosphere.
Well, I've been to the Himalayas at 18,000 feet, and it's breathable without any equipment whatsoever, and it's windy. And Lord knows Mars does have wind. It has dust storms you can see from Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And, okay, so I'd like to go to Mars and just get out and breathe. And I bet you can do it. I guarantee you can do it. And if you can't, you get out a blowtorch and you light that and burn some dirt, because when they burn the dirt, they get a huge spike of oxygen out of it on their graphs. So you just burn you some dirt and breathe it, and it's totally livable. It might be a little cool, but it's totally livable, in my opinion. Now, that's not a very noble reason to want to go to Mars. And that certainly would not be sufficient for NASA to expend the funds that it takes to do a trip. So let's talk about doing a trip to Mars with this new engine. And what are they going to do? What's the purpose of the colony? I know you said it might just be, you know, we want to go over there because Earth's too small. But what are they going to do? What are they going to accomplish here?
I think the first order of business would be to run experiments with seeds that we take from here to there, see if we can plant plants, see if they'll grow, see if they'll yield fruit. And if they will, then a colony there could become. $1 billion budget, and we're going to put it into the space program, and we're going to do it in a big way. We're going to launch a rocket every 90 days to another planet. What do you think the other nations on this planet would do? What does the United States know that we don't know? Why did they just cut their military budget in half and now they're exploring space in a very aggressive way.
There would be some that would do that, and there would be some, in fact, I think many, who would say, now's the time, let's attack.
Well, we have plenty of weapons, I'll put it that way. Anybody that's willing to put a uniform on and make the first parade march against the United States, I promise, everybody in that line has been photographed. And if the United States wanted to, we could drop them in their drawers right there where they stand, right there on the parade ground, anytime we want.
All right. So let's talk about some socio-political things that this technology causes. And let's take this call first, and then we'll get back to that. It's called exopolitics, but we'll get back to that after this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Agnew.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Now, Mars, we've kind of mapped the surface a little bit, but do we have any way to see underneath the ground, such as like how they do with the satellites and all that kind of stuff here on Earth?
Yes, we do, but we're not really reporting on it. I don't know why. Mars has a primary ground probing radar unit on it. Now, when I say primary, ground probing radar takes at least two antennas to make it work. And usually, at least all the ground probing radar that I've used, it has to be present on the surface, because by triangulation, that's how you figure out the depth of whatever formation you're getting your spectrographic signal back from. That's orbiting Mars can only take what we call qualitative measurements. That is to say, it can say, yes, there's water under the surface, but it can't tell you how deep it is. You need another antenna for that, and we don't have that yet, not on the surface.
Okay, and do we always see the same side of Mars like we do the Moon?
No. Mars revolves. It doesn't revolve in what we call a geosynced revolution like the Moon. It revolves on its own axis. It has at least two moons, and it revolves. It has a north and a south pole, but no magnetosphere.
And that technology, Brent asked about the airplanes. Do you think we'll be able to have smaller units for, like, our cars?
Oh, you know, that's a good possibility, because the jet that comes out of this nozzle doesn't have to be launched out into the air to make propulsion. It can be used to turn a turbine. It can be used to boil water, to make steam, you know, generate electricity. If these things are scalable down as small as they think they are, then that kind of reaction could be contained. I don't know if it could be done small enough to do a car, but it could be done small enough to, you know, say a large ship, like an aircraft carrier or a cruise ship or something like that.
So after the radioactivity level is down, is there any other dangers to it as far as the atmosphere or to us, other than just, you know, the initial radioactivity?
No, not at all. The byproduct is helium and neutrons, and the neutrons just go right out into the atmosphere just like any other neutron would. Once the charge, which is somewhere around 2 mega electron volts. I don't know if you know what that means. That's quite a bit of charge. It's a lot of mass in a neutron. Once that's expended, it's just a harmless little old neutron.
So, now, did you just say that it takes helium to make the reaction, or?
No, helium is the product. When you're fusion, you're taking hydrogen protons, which are big, heavy protons. They're the heaviest protons in the nuclide chart. And you're physically fusing them together to make a helium atom out of two hydrogen atoms. Now, in order for it to do that, each proton has to lose a little bit of weight. That weight times the speed of light squared is the amount of energy that it releases.
Isn't there's got to be a danger to, seems like, when you take too much, like, you can't ever take too much hydrogen, like, out of the air or atmosphere?
No, there's plenty of hydrogen to do this. Deuterium and tritium are manufactured in a fairly cheap process. We use deuterium lamps and all kinds of test equipment, and they're pretty darn cheap. They're not much more expensive than a regular incandescent light.
All right. Well, that's all I had. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Okay. Good point, though. A question that he asked is a question I think a lot of people would ask, and that isn't there a danger that you'll deplete the atmosphere of hydrogen? But hydrogen, isn't that the most plentiful substance in all the universe?
It is. Stars are really the generators of all the elements in the universe, especially the lower order ones, hydrogen, oxygen. At least a solar system, maybe a couple of solar systems large, and higher order elements are made during those kinds of events. But stars generate oxygen, nitrogen, silicon, carbon, stuff like that. That's where those elements come from.
So as long as you have stars out there doing their thing, you're going to have hydrogen.
Absolutely.
But is that any indication, and we're just a couple of minutes here from break. Is there any indication that hydrogen being produced by that star 22 light years away is going to make it here?
It does, because there is a stellar gas. You know, we're bathed in a solar wind all the time, and those protons reach Earth usually, you know, between 0.1 and 6 protons per cubic centimeter. But those protons do reach Earth and all the planets in our solar system all the way out to the edge of the heliosphere.
So we're getting a constant bath of hydrogen.
Yes, we are. We're getting a constant bath of protons from the sun. And some of them strike air molecules and create cosmic rays as different electrons are sputtered off of those high-altitude molecules. And, of course, the ozone layer helps us out a little bit. High-energy particles in the Van Allen radiation belts also help deflect some of that. But all those high-energy protons and low-energy protons come from the sun and also from the galaxy. We receive protons from other stars as well.
We have to step away for a break. We'll be back. The telephone lines are open. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew, and we're talking about this very exciting scientific development and engineering development with the development of a new type of rocket engine called the fusion-driven rocket. And it's something NASA is funding part of the project. They say that with this, they will be able to go to Mars in 30 days and get back in 30 days, making Mars exploration by humans something really feasible. So let's talk about exopolitics a little bit, and then I want to talk about logistics a little bit. With our guest, is Dr. Brooks Agnew. Again, the telephone lines are open at 623-444-5889 if you wish to call and you have a comment or a question for Dr. Agnew. That's the way to do it. All right, let's talk about exopolitics. Colony gets formed. At some point down the road, somebody is going to have a baby up there. And maybe several babies. And then they are going to have children. And they are going to have children. And we get three, four, five generations down the road, and the colony starts thinking of themselves as Martians. They're not from Earth. What do you mean? I was born here. Now you have an exopolitical problem. And anybody that thinks that that won't be a problem is drinking left-handed Kool-Aid. So how do we handle that?
Well, you don't tax their tea. That's one thing.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question. It's one that countries have faced since the dawn of time. As the parent company, whether it's Spain, Ferdinand and Isabella, or whether it's King George sending colonists over here to the U.S. or to the American continent, they spend all the money
let's make it more complex. That would be an exopolitical situation. Let's talk about exosociological. You can keep those people, when I say you, I'm talking about us collectively here on Earth. We can keep those people on Mars convinced that they're tied to Earth for a few generations, and then you're going to have a bunch of people that stand up, as I said, and say, hey, you know, I have never even seen Earth, okay? I've just seen it in pictures in books and at school. I was born here. This is Mars for Martians, and I'm a native Martian, okay? that's a sociological issue as well, because if we do a mining colony and we're saying to them, you send the product back, we are doing to them what the Sumerians said the Anunnaki did to us in the beginning. And we have turned them into a slave population for Earth then, although we may not treat them as slaves in our minds, that is effectively what they are.
Well, if there is a relationship of trade between us, as there was between Britain and the American continent in the late 1600s and mid 1700s, then the relationship could go forward. But as you say, the parent colony always takes advantage of that and ends up on the money end of the stick. Mm-hmm. That's where it's, you know, probably going to take a little bit, no matter how you work it, it's going to be difficult to negotiate. But there's something else to consider here, because when the colonists came from Britain to the American continent, they didn't change genetically. Several generations on Mars, something is going to happen to their genetics, because we have a lot of DNA that tries to come forward and give us some kind of survivability advantage on this planet. And with 7 billion of us, we have stratified somewhat. Some people could take cold, some people could take extreme heat and low water, and some people have more body fat than others. We have stratified a little bit. But on Mars, you're talking about some serious physiological stratification. That is to say, with less gravity, less oxygen, different nutrients in the soil, their DNA is going to develop for a survivability advantage on Mars. They're not only going to be socioeconomically different than Earth, but they're going to be physically different than Earth. And it's highly likely that in 10, 15 generations, Martians will not be able to return to Earth.
Ergo, Mars for Martians.
Correct.
And they will be truly native Martians at that point. Maybe not aboriginal, but they will be truly native to Mars at that point. So, you know, it's very, very exciting to think about this colonization of Mars. And here we've got, you know, a rocket engine that apparently, a good size version of it has been built. That's a prototype that I'm showing on the screen. You know, perhaps the rocket to Mars would have more than one of these. Perhaps it would have a larger version of this. But there it is. So Mars is within our colonization of Mars, is within our technological grasp.
We'd be sending well-trained, highly educated, very highly skilled people to Mars. And they would probably be highly indoctrinated in our way of thinking. So it's a different kind of sociological experiment, don't you think?
No. You lay out a good case. But people with PhDs, this does not apply to all of them, but people with PhDs don't normally dig in the mines. And you're going to be sending a hell of a lot of labor up there.
You make a good point. And besides, PhDs are ugly, and they don't multiply.
I won't comment. I've made up for a bunch of them. Anyway, if it's going to be a mining operation, anything like that, you're going to be sending a hell of a lot of labor up there. Yes, there will be the availability of high technology, but not at the beginning. There'll be some high technology.
Yeah, you're right.
You're going to have a bunch of guys with picks and shovels. And guys with picks and shovels who decide to be free generally make it.
Well, that's true, especially if they have a high education and they're not afraid of a shovel. You're mm-hmm. exactly right.
Yeah. I think it's exciting. I mean, all of the negatives that I've brought up as you know, possibilities, all of that notwithstanding, I think it ought to be done. And, while I would hope that, you know, we could get past some of these sociological problems and some of these political problems that are bound to happen, I realize that, you know, this planet is still populated with warts on our butt that think it's cool to laugh at people dying. And, we're in a mess. This planet is insane. And,
if you're talking about the events that happened today, Boston is a densely populated, very highly educated, feisty city.
Yeah, we have to take a break. You can pick up there when we come back. All right. All right, folks, we will be back right after this. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Dr. Brooks Agnew. We're on final approach. That means we only have just a few minutes left in tonight's show. If you're going to call, now's the time. 623-444-5889. Dr. Agnew, I had to cut you off as we went away for break, and I had made the comment, this planet's insane. And you then were starting to say something about Boston.
Well, I agree with you about the planet's insanity. I mean, we love rock and roll, we love racing, we love football, and for some reason there are some people that just want to indiscriminately hurt other people, like what went on in Boston today. Mm-hmm. And I can say that, you know, a small handful of cowards cannot, must not change our way of living.
Well, they've already done it, and they will again.
They have.
The president ordered a full federal response to the Boston situation, and these days a full federal response is tantamount to brown shirt. So they've already done it. The terrorists already won. This is the Fourth Reich. It is locked down America.
Some people are talking about martial law. I personally don't see that that's going to happen. However, it depends on what they find in those trash cans that blew up. If those were ordinary household chemicals, or those were things like shotgun powder or rifle powder or something like that, you're going to see all the reloading equipment in this country gathered up as bomb-making paraphernalia, and the American people, the American shooter, will be out of business.
Maybe. I am not one of them. I don't even own a gun. That's not going to be a walk in the park if they decide to do that. When I say we are in lockdown America, I don't mean is martial law coming. I mean, right now, you're under constant 24-hour surveillance. Now, I'm not doing anything for which I am nervous about them surveilling. The fact is, this show is being surveilled. Your telephone calls are being surveilled. You're being tracked by your telephone and by your various Wi-Fi devices that you carry with you. Every single email is being gone through and examined. Every email of every individual, no warrants, it's a total, complete, absolute, abject abrogation and violation of the Constitution. And the Constitution is no longer in play. You are in lockdown America.
That's true. And the American Security Council is going to get a briefing tomorrow from those that have gathered enough information from this. And believe me, Homeland Security had a complete central satellite station set up right there on that street, not 100 yards from where those bombs went off. They probably know who did it. They know how they made it. They know where to find them. But that's not the important thing. The important thing is that it gives the administration another nail in the coffin of American freedom.
Well, it gives, in an attempt. But that's not going to be a walk in the park. And, it's sad. And it's the insanity I'm talking about. Not just in this country. This whole world's insane. You got psychos in control of a whole bunch of countries. And, of course, we know about North Korea. And that's a pretty easy call right there. The whole planet's insane. Now, what's to say we're not going to export that to Mars?
Wow. I hadn't even thought about that. You know, I watched the movie Contact, and it was Carl Sagan's book that he wrote while he was alive, obviously, and I think he would have loved to have seen what Jodie Foster did with the movie. But even in that international effort, you saw a religious terrorist bomb one of the transport equipment that basically, it killed Jodie Foster's boss and ruined the opportunity to go at least on that machine. You're exactly right. There are religious nutcases out there, and I hear them on the radio all the time talking about how all aliens are demons and anybody that doesn't profess this religion or that religion, you know, has to be killed. It's just nuts, though. I don't even know where some of these humans get their ideas.
Well, nor do I. But we're living in an asylum run by the inmates now. And, you know, as excited as I am about Mars exploration, I don't know how you don't export the insanity of this planet. It's so pervasive. And I'm not sure that we will successfully export much of anything to Mars. I think we'll go. I think we'll get a colony going. But I'm not real sure that the home planet is going to be capable of maintaining ties with Mars for much longer. I think we're going to do ourselves in with our own insanity.
Well, I have no choice but to think that there is a very good part of humanity, and that the more part of the world still is good, and that maybe we can rise above this.
If you can wake them up, but it's very, very difficult to wake up a mushroom.
Well, that's what we're here to do. That's why the Kevin Smith Show exists.
Well, I'm excited about this. With all of the things that I see as real, genuine, possible problems with it, I'm excited about it. It's something I think we should do. I think we probably will do. And I just hope there's some way we can filter out the insanity from leaving the planet here. I would like to think that there is at least a possibility of getting off of this planet and going somewhere where there is some sanity.
Well, as long as there's good music, something tasty to drink, and some beautiful scenery, I think we're going to make it.
Yeah. Do you have a website you would like to direct us to?
Sure. You can go to my Sunday evening program, which is X Squared Radio. It's easy to Google. And if you would like a copy of Alienated Nation, the new quest for liberty, which details a constitutional convention by which we can save this republic, you can go to either that website or alienatednation.com. And if you go there and buy the book, you will get it autographed. Plus, you get the entire book in audio for free. So if you're not a good reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you.
There you go. And Alienated, where do they go to get that again?
Alienatednation.com.
Very, very good. I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking with us about this exciting technological possibility. It's been very, very interesting.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as we bring this one in for our close. Very quickly, ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you, the Kevin Smith Show is 100% listener supported. And if the audience thinks we don't need to be here, we won't be. And if you think we need to be here, well, there's a donate button on our site, kevinsmithshow.com, $1, $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, $1,000, anything in between or above, doesn't matter. It all goes to help us still be here tomorrow. And that is, of course, our intention, to be here tomorrow, bringing you more information from the world of the strange and unexplained. Mars exploration is, at this point, pretty strange and pretty unexplained. We'll soon know for sure. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.